The notion that the university is an ivory tower, a dreamy space outside the main forces that shape people's daily life, now is barely even a faded shadow. Reality is far different for those who teach at today's universities. That different reality brought 3,300 teaching assistants and contract faculty at York University to go on strike for over 2 months before the government ordered them back to work. To discuss the current conditions for contract faculty and the significance of the strike at York University, I'm joined by Dan Crow. Dan Crow teaches at Brock University in St. Catharines, Ontario. He is president of his local union, QP4207, and he is vice chair of the Ontario University Workers Coordinating Committee. Good morning, Dan, and welcome to Vancouver Cooperative Radio.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
One of the important features of today's Canadian universities is the contingent academic worker. What are the working conditions for such a person?
Oh, well, that's it varies a bit depending on what position you actually work, but for the contingent faculty of which I am a member, starts off with an unsure workload. Year after year, there's no certainty as to how much work you're going to be able to have or where you're going to be working. A number of people that I know, in fact, I did it myself for a number of years, work at multiple universities and have to spend a good portion of their week traveling between a number of different institutions to try to make ends meet. It's an interesting position because you get to be semi-permanent at each of these institutions because you work year after year after year and you become a core part of a department and you sort of feel an attachment to the departments, but at the same time you have to realize that you're disposable and it's possible to be just tossed away if the courses that you want to teach or the courses you're capable of teaching are not posted. It's a highly insecure kind of lifestyle to live. Unfortunately, the secure jobs are disappearing. Fewer and fewer full-time permanent faculty positions are being offered. So we end up just flooding and being in competition for the jobs that are out there. It's not a fun way to live, but unfortunately, it's becoming all too regular for a growing population.
And given the insecurity of the employment and the constant renegotiation of work, what sort of pay or benefits, material benefits, does a person in this situation receive?
Well, the pay will vary from institution to institution, depending on whether or not a union exists, how long the union exists. The average rate is about between $12,000 and $14,000 for 1 8-month course. Of course, most courses are being offered as half credit, so you're looking at $5,500 to $6,000 or so per course. Benefits are very hard to come by because we're not considered to be permanent employees, even though we are permanent parts of departments. The employers say that that they can't negotiate, or sorry, won't negotiate benefits plans. And many of us who work full time in the system at multiple universities have workloads that are in excess of what faculty members are making or have, and still have no access to pensions or benefits or anything like that. I would say that for for contingent academic workers who work a similar or even larger workload to a faculty member, you're earning about a third to a half of what full-time faculty make for doing exactly the same job,
and not getting in the benefits in most cases.
Exactly.
So what percentage of a total teaching faculty are people in this contingent academics work situation?
Well, at the larger universities, it's growing to more than half of all undergraduate teaching. In some other universities, Brock, for example, where I work, the faculty association were successful at negotiating language that only 14 or 15% of the work will be done by people who aren't in their union. Now, the employer will, instead of creating new permanent positions, will have limited term appointments, which give people a bit more job security, usually a year or two. It's certainly more income security for that period of time, but they end up being in a position to reapply for their work after that. And even going a bit further than that, the employer routinely violates that that threshold anyway, so it would be above 20% of the teaching at Brock, for example, is done by a contingent academic workforce.
And you're saying it's higher in other places?
Oh, it's absolutely higher. In fact, at York, one of the driving factors was the fact that more than 50% of undergrad teaching is done by the part-time contingent workforce.
And this is not just a Canadian phenomenon.
No, this is happening all over the place. The United States has been at the leading edge of making precarious work predominate, but it's happening across Europe as well. It's part of, you know, what's euphemistically referred to as the new economy. It's not just for the service and manufacturing sectors, it's for the public sector as well. There's been a push for the last, 30 years at least, to move towards more flexible labor markets, to have jobs offered not as permanent full-time like the standard employment model that was that dominated during the post-war era, where you could have one job for, if not a lifetime, at least for a large portion of your life, earning benefits and a pension. There's been a move away from offering work of that model and offering things on a contingent basis. Part-time work has expanded dramatically. There's been an increase in contract work, so it might be full-time, but it's a limited term appointment. So precariousness has risen across the board as people are losing job security and, unfortunately, becoming a little bit too used to it. Fortunately, in our sector, we've got a coordinating committee that's helping us to fight against this, because we think that it's still possible to fight for good jobs.
Is this precariousness of employment go together also with underfunding of universities? Because that is a common cry we hear, that the universities do lack, and post-secondary institutions do lack, the necessary governmental support to carry out their mandate.
Absolutely. This goes back to the question about neoliberalism, for sure. Governments have been trying to offload the cost of spending. They've been cutting budgets in Ontario at least since the mid-1990s, but even before that, budgets were being truncated. Universities are not in a position to offer as many full-time permanent positions because the budget just isn't there. And as there become increasing pressures on individual university budgets, they find that one way to save money is to not refill faculty positions after retirements. So that work gets posted as contingent work because it saves an awful lot of money. We really need to address that the problem of underfunding. I can speak specifically about Ontario, which ranks last out of all 10 provinces in terms of per-student funding for post-secondary education, which is putting downward pressure on the universities, which is causing a political crisis on each campus, much like what happened at York University since November 6th.
And what would you say are some of the effects of this pattern of organization of the teaching? What are the effects on learning, on education itself?
Well, it has an impact on the instructor's or the teacher's ability to do research. When your day is taken up moving from institution to institution, when you're traveling instead of going out doing the research that is supposed to be one of the core functions of the university, it's more difficult to bring new knowledge into the classroom. For students, they have a more difficult time getting face-to-face contact with their instructors because their office hours are usually by appointment, and those appointments are tough to get because people are moving around all the time. Letters of reference for jobs and for graduate school are becoming more and more difficult to get because, the application process has privileges letters that are from tenured faculty. So those people who are only ever taught by the part-time contingent workforce are in a less competitive position, even though they would be just as competent and probably excellent candidates for jobs and graduate school and these sorts of things.
And what about vulnerability with regards to speaking your own critical thoughts on a particular subject that you're teaching?
Yeah, that's certainly a huge worry, especially in those places where the job security is the lowest. If you have job security, you can speak your mind and likely still get your job back the next year if you've got a strong seniority article in your collective agreement, for example. Other places, if you speak your mind, the department just won't hire you back. In fact, even with a collective agreement, departments attempt to blackball people. It's something that's happened at a number of universities that I've been involved with personally. But what is actually even more insidious is if you speak your mind as a contingent academic worker, you find it more difficult to actually get those tenured jobs or tenure track jobs when they're posted. So you can be, you can be hit one of two different ways, and it becomes more difficult unless you're willing to toe the line, which is not as true when it comes to tenured faculty.
The people at York, the workers, the teachers, were on strike for a long time. They were then ordered back to work by the government, and the government now can appoint an arbitrator to write the contract. How would you assess the gains and losses of that strike?
Well, in terms of the gains, very clearly the issue of underfunding has been put on the political agenda. Newspaper articles are discussing this. Ministers are being forced to address the issue. There's a current round of budget cutting across all universities in Ontario that is sort of heightening the sense of the crisis. So as a warning sign of things to come, I think that was one of the huge successes out of that strike. What I think is definitely problematic is that the back to work legislation has given a signal to administrators that if they choose not to bargain, if they choose not to sit down and try to come to an agreement, eventually the government will step in and absolve them of that responsibility. The York negotiating team, the university side, had been insisting upon binding arbitration since last summer. They met 11 times between November and late January to try to come up with a contract, and every time it was the employer that walked away from the table. And with the government coming in and saying, well, we'll let the employer walk away, that sends a sign to other universities. I think that it's a lesson that we can learn in the sector and that we can find multiple strategies to compel the university administration to sit down with us and negotiate. And much like other sectors where back-to-work legislation has been regular in rail, in the post office, for example, we can we can take this and expect that it is possible that it will come, and find strategies to strengthen our negotiating position, even under the threat of back to work legislation.
Well, thanks for joining us this morning. I know you're in the middle of a 14-hour workday on your weekend, and I wish you good energy in continuing with that. Thanks a lot, Dan.
Thank you so much.
I've been speaking with Dan Crowe. He teaches at Brock University in St. Catharines, Ontario. He's president of his local union, QP4207, and he's also vice chair of the Ontario University Workers Coordinating Committee.